Good morning. How is everyone today? Good, good. I haven't got my notes pulled up here so I don't just ramble because that would be interesting. Y'all, we are starting a new series today that I am really excited about because I truly believe that there is still like a little bit of childhood left in all of us, right? Like, do you guys ever act childish? I mean, look to your neighbor. They can tell you if you have. So we are doing a new series today that actually the idea came from my 9-year-old, and we are calling it Beyond the Flannel Graph. Okay. I'm really excited about it. First, raise your hand if you know what a flannel graph is. Okay, you guys just dated yourselves. So a flannel graph is, it's as a kid in Sunday school class, it's how I remember learning about Bible stories. It's how I was taught. And to this day, when I'm reading some of the stories, I can picture that big green felt board that was in our Sunday school class and the pictures that would be added up to it to kind of illustrate the story as it went along. So it kind of gave us a visual for the story. And if we were really good and we colored our page and we got done in time, then sometimes the teacher, who was my aunt, she would even let us play with the flannel graphs just a little bit and do our own little scenes and create our own little Bible stories, which were probably not blessed by God. But these flannel graph stories, they created the visual that I had for the Bible stories that I learned as a kid. But see, as I grew older and I started reading some of these stories for myself, I realized that the flannel graph version was only a small part of the story. See, the kids' version, it tends to highlight the good attributes of the main character of the story. And it often turns the story into a moral lesson. And I don't know about you, but I grew up with kind of a happy image of a lot of stories from the Old Testament. Example, like, I thought that Noah and the Ark was all about rainbows and cute little animals. And then as I grow older and I start to read it for myself and the reality of what really happened in that story, it begins to hit. And when that began to hit for me, it almost threw me into a crisis of faith. It made me start doubting things about what I knew about God. See, I'm not saying that we should teach kids all the graphic detail of all the stories of the Old Testament because there is a certain level of maturity that is needed for some of these difficult parts of the Old Testament. But we also cannot gloss over these difficult parts forever. At some point, we have to be willing to try to understand the stories in their entirety, in their context, and in their purpose within the overarching story of God, so that we can understand them how they were meant to be understood. See, if we only teach about the rainbow and the cute little animals and ignore the deeper lesson of why the earth was destroyed by a flood, then we're setting ourselves up for a crisis of faith. And I'm sure most of you can think back to one story that you learned as a kid from the Old Testament that as you got older and you started reading the whole story, that it started making you ask questions that you were uncomfortable asking. See, the Old Testament's hard, and it can be very difficult to understand and hard to see God's character of love and grace through all the wars and the destructions. But each story has a place and a purpose in the story of God. In Romans, Paul assures us, he says in Romans 15:4, that everything that was written in the past was written to teach us, so that through the endurance taught in the scriptures and the encouragement they provide, we might have hope. It's hard to read some of these Old Testament stories and have hope and see that they inspire hope. But that's a challenge that we have. So we're going to look at these familiar stories with an open mind to understand them within the proper context, and to see how they all point toward the hope that we have in Jesus. Okay, so sum up. The point of this series is to look at some well-known stories from the Old Testament that we're all probably at least a little bit familiar with in a way that we can try to find a deeper meaning than what we initially learned about as kids. Okay, are you guys all with me? Okay, but we're going to have some fun with this series. You guys like to have fun? You guys are boring this morning. You're just staring at me. Okay, we're going to have some fun. So I've got a graphic that Steve is going to throw up here in just a second. And when this graphic comes up, he gave you a hint. When this comes up, I want you guys to all tell me who we're going to be talking about today. Okay, go. Yes, you guys are all offbeat, but yes, Joshua and the Wall of Jericho. So does everybody know that story? Is there anyone? You don't have to raise your hand if you don't know the story. It's fine. So yes, Joshua and the Wall of Jericho. And I remember this story very well from my childhood. And I even remember, like, with my cousins at my grandma's house one time, like, marching around her house and, like, playing our mouth trumpets. And by the way, the house did not fall down. I guess we didn't do it right. But I remember playing our own version of the Jericho March. Did anyone else do that? Or me and my cousins the only weird? Okay, good. We weren't the only weird ones. Okay, so this story is usually told with an emphasis about being brave and obedient and trusting God to fight for you. And that's something that is very special to me. I've even taught Joshua 1:9 to my kids. And I have this really cute video, if you're interested, I'll show it to you, of my oldest when he was like maybe 2 or 3, and he would go, "Be brave, strong, and courageous." Because Joshua 1:9 is, it's full of that empowerment. And we even have that scripture in my youngest son's bedroom wall. And while that's not wrong, there is so much more that we can learn from this story if we look beyond the flannel graph. But see, flannel graphs have mostly been replaced with videos now. I understand I'm getting older, and a lot of the ways that I grew up learning things have been taken over by technology. So instead of listening to me sum up the story, I found a video that we're going to watch that's going to kind of give us an overview of what the story is.
Stories of the Bible, the walls of Jericho. This is Joshua.
Oh, hey.
Joshua was the leader of the Israelites, who God used to bring his people to the promised land.
Yeah, let's do this.
When God told Joshua it was time to take the promised land, Joshua sent spies into the city of Jericho. While those spies were in Jericho,
come on!
They were protected by a woman named Rahab. The spies promised to spare Rahab and her family when they took back the land.
Yay!
And she hung a scarlet cord from her window to remind them of their promise.
See you soon!
Hey!
Hello!
One day, Joshua looked up.
Huh?
And there was a man standing before him.
Hello.
The man said, "I am the commander of the army of the Lord." Joshua asked what the man wanted to tell him, and the Lord said he wanted Joshua to take the city of Jericho.
All right.
But that Joshua needed to follow his instructions exactly.
You got it.
Now Jericho was shut for fear of the Israelites.
Anyone went home? Yeah, well.
No one came out, and no one came in. So the Lord told Joshua to gather his soldiers and march around the city for 6 days. The priests were to take the Ark of the Covenant, and 7 priests were to go in front of it, blowing a ram's horn. On the 7th day, they were to march around the city 7 times and blow the horn. Then all the people of Israel were to give a great shout.
Then what?
And then the city walls would fall.
Wow! Yeah, let's do it!
So Joshua said, "Shout, for the Lord has given you the city." And the people did shout.
Yeah!
And the walls did fall.
Let's go!
The Israelites overtook the city of Jericho as God had commanded. They remembered Rahab because of her faithfulness. Now Joshua was faithful in carrying out God's commands, and the Israelites took many other cities as God told them they would, for God will never fail to fulfill His promises. So the Israelites came to live in the land that God had promised their fathers Abraham, Isaac, Israel, Joseph, and Moses many years ago.
That's cute, isn't it? You guys gonna walk around all week going, hello? Yeah, I love it. And it does a pretty good job of telling like a quick overview of the story. But this is one story that has like always empowered me as a believer. If I'm obedient and I'm faithful to God, then He's gonna knock down those walls that are in front of me, and I'm like, whoa, let's go, let's do this. I'm not gonna lie, like I thought that this would be an easy message to write. Like I found the video and it was really cute. And I was like, yeah, I'm gonna like breeze through this. We'll talk about knocking down those walls and being courageous and stuff. But see, then I opened my Bible to Joshua and I started to read what happened before and after the story about the walls and stuff. And I was stumped. And so, like I always do when I'm stumped, I called my sister and I whined to her about not wanting to write the message because it was hard. Like it's messy, it's uncomfortable. And I was like, I don't want to talk about this. I have kids in the room. Like this is uncomfortable. It's not easy to digest. It makes you have to think about it for a little bit. I don't know how to present this story. See, like many of the Old Testament stories, this one is violent, and it can make God look vengeful and angry when it's taken out of context. And that's not something that we can fully address today, but I'll be posting an article and a video on Facebook at some point this week that has kind of helped me to come to terms with what I was reading. And as always, like if this is something that you're struggling with, if you are having trouble reconciling the God of the Old Testament with Jesus of the New Testament, then I would love to sit down and talk with you. I don't have all the answers, but I guarantee that I've had the same doubts and questions. But see, today I don't want to just talk about Joshua and the wall. There's a few other people in this story that we can learn a lot from. So first, we meet Rahab in chapter 2 of Joshua. Now, Rahab was a prostitute who lived in the city of Jericho. And when Joshua sent two spies to check out the city to see how hard it would be to penetrate the walls to conquer the city, she risked her life to save them and help them escape. And she told the spies in Joshua 2, verse 9, I know that the Lord has given you this land and that a great fear of you has fallen on us so that all who live in this country are melting in fear because of you. We have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt and what you did to Sihon and Og, the two kings of the Amorites east of the Jordan, whom you completely destroyed. When we heard of it, our hearts melted in fear, and everyone's courage failed because of you. For the Lord your God is God in heaven above and on the earth below. Okay, so let's step back and think about this for a minute. Rahab has a lot of things working against her. She's a woman in a male-dominated society. She is most likely from a low-class, maybe even a servant family, that was forced into a demeaning profession in order to survive. She probably had dealt with a lot of trauma in her life. And it could have made her hard and jaded. She could have walked around with a chip on her shoulder and a woe is me attitude. And we can assume these things just based on the limited information that we have about her. But see, we don't need to have all the details of her story. Because what matters here is her faith and her actions. See, Rahab takes a huge risk and she helps these two men because she is convinced without a shadow of a doubt that their God is all-powerful. See, she'd heard rumors about this wandering group of people, the Israelites. She's wise enough not to align herself with anyone who would stand against the God that protects them. See, she boldly declares to these two men that the Lord your God is God in heaven above and on the earth below. Now, there's a lot more to that statement than you would think by just reading it. See, we have to flip back to Deuteronomy 4 to see why this is so important. See, the book of Deuteronomy is a record of this great speech that Moses gave before his death. He was addressing the generation of Israelites that had grown up in the wilderness. So they've been in the wilderness for like 40 years at this point. Everybody that had first stepped foot into the wilderness had passed on. And now we have this brand new group of people that knew nothing but life in the wilderness. But now it was time, and Moses was preparing them to walk into the promised land of Canaan. And he reminds them of how God had been faithful to them for the 40 years that their people were in the desert. And he points out several times that they were kept from entering into the promised land because they had been unfaithful to God. So in that 40 years, God had protected them. He had provided for them every day with manna and from heaven, and he had been everything for them. Yet they still, over and over again, decided to be unfaithful to him. But now, this new generation of people, they are ready to walk into the promise that God had given to their fathers. So Moses is reminding them, if they follow God's laws, they will be blessed. But if they rebel, God would not defend them. So Moses tells them in Deuteronomy 4:39, he says, acknowledge and take heart this day that the Lord is God in heaven above and on the earth below. There is no other. Does that sound familiar? Just a little bit, kind of word for word. See, remember from a few series ago when Lord is in all caps like it is here, it means something. It's not just saying leader. It's saying the one true God, Jehovah. Y'all, like, you know I'm nerdy. By now you've figured out that I'm pretty nerdy. And I get really excited when I find stuff like this. So look at this. I've got a graphic here. See, Moses tells the people living under the covenant promise of God to acknowledge and take heart of who the Lord, Jehovah, is. This is what you're to do if you're going to find success in the promised land. Take heart and acknowledge who Jehovah is. And then this bottom of society, non-covenant woman living in a land that God has promised to give to the Israelites, acknowledges and takes heart word for word what Moses said about who the Lord Jehovah is. See, she wasn't there when Moses made this speech. She was living in a life of sin in a foreign land. She was in Jericho, not the wilderness. She did not hear his speech broadcast on CNN or NPR. There was no way that she had ever come into contact with this speech. But God himself revealed the truth of who he is to her before the spies ever entered the gate. And she trusted and believed him to be the one God, Jehovah. Isn't that cool? Did anyone else get goosebumps thinking about that? Maybe I should say it louder. Should I yell a little bit more? No. Y'all, it's just cool. See, Rahab was not a biological member of the family of Abraham. She was not born into the covenant promise of God. But through her faith, she became a true spiritual descendant of Abraham. Through her faith, she became part of the family of God. And the spies made an oath to Rahab that no harm would come to her or her family because she had honored God by helping them escape. So some time passes, and the Israelites, they're now in the promised land. They've crossed over the Jordan, which is another cool story that you guys should read. And they're in the promised land, and they're outside of the gates of Jericho, and they're looking at this wall. Now imagine, all of these people had been born and raised in the wilderness. They didn't know anything about cities. And they're probably feeling a bit confused about what to do with this big wall. See, they were nomads. They didn't have settlements. They didn't have homes. They had tents. They didn't have wealth. They had manna from heaven. They had never seen anything like this city. Like, talk about cultural shock. Like, what are they going to do with this? And then in Joshua 5:13, it says that when Joshua was near Jericho, he looked up and he saw a man standing in front of him with a drawn sword in his hand. And Joshua went up to him and asked, "Are you for us or for our enemies?" "Neither," he replied, "but as commander of the army of the Lord, I have now come." Then Joshua fell face down to the ground in reverence and asked him, "What message does my Lord have for his servant?" And then Joshua gets specific instructions on how the battle was supposed to go down directly from God himself. So the Israelites, they marched around the wall for 7 days. And then on the seventh day, on the seventh time around, the priest sounded the trumpets and Joshua commanded the army. He said, "Shout, for the Lord has given you the city. The city and all that is in it are to be devoted to the Lord. Only Rahab the prostitute and all who are with her in her house shall be spared because she hid the spies that we sent. But keep away from the devoted things, the things that are devoted to God, so that you will bring about no destruction on your own by taking any of them. Otherwise, you will make the camp of Israel liable to destruction and bring trouble on it. All the silver and gold and articles of bronze and iron are sacred to the Lord and must go into his treasury." So the walls came crashing down and they took the city. But Joshua spared Rahab the prostitute with her family and all who belonged to her because she hid the men Joshua had sent as spies to Jericho, and she lives among the Israelites to this day. Not to this day. That was a long time ago, but to when this was written. See, it was her faith and obedience to God that saved her entire family. And that's not the end of her story, but we'll catch back up with her in just a minute. Okay, so the Israelites had just had this enormous victory. God had knocked down the wall. They raised a loud enough hallelujah, and they showed with their faith that they trusted God to defeat the enemy. Man, they are pumped up. Like, can you imagine what that would feel like? Like, they are excited. They can conquer the world, so they focus on the next region on their list, and it's a city called Ai. And in Joshua 7, it says, "But the Israelites were unfaithful in regard to the devoted things." Whoops. See, Achan, son of Carmi, the son of Zimri, the son of Zerah, of the tribe of Judah, took some of them. So the Lord's anger burned against Israel. Seriously? Like, they're all pumped up. God knocked down the wall. Rahab and her family were saved. Everything's good. Good, happy ending. First verse of the next chapter, but the Israelites were unfaithful. But see, as a whole, the Israelites did not realize that God was no longer with them. See, they were not attuned to knowing if his presence was still there. They were all pumped up and excited and ready to go conquer. They just assumed God was still with them. They were still confident from Jericho. So the Israelites decided to only take a fraction of their army to Ai. What happened? they were quickly defeated. They're run away. See, the Lord was not with them. Jehovah didn't have their back because of the disobedience of Achan. Now, it seems to me, because we all just read that verse together, it seems to me that Joshua made it pretty clear that the commander of the Lord's army said, do not take anything from the city. No one's supposed to loot from Jericho. And it's not because God needs silver. It's because God needs your trust. God needs your faith. He needs to know that just because you're walking into this new season of a new kind of provision and favor, that that doesn't mean that you're going to stop depending on him. Yet, Achan decided to take a few things for himself. So who is this Achan dude? See, we get just a little bit of his family history, but I believe it's enough. First, he is a direct descendant of Abraham. And as such, he was born and raised living under the covenant promise of God. And he would have been raised in the wilderness. He wouldn't have known anything of wealth or fine clothing. All he knew was God's provision. But see, what stands out to me the most about what we know from him is that he is a member of the tribe of Judah. See, back in Genesis 49, Jacob, the father of the 12 sons who became the 12 tribes of Israel, he gives a blessing to each of the sons. And for Judah, who he refers to as a lion, he prophesies that the scepter will not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet, until he whom it belongs to shall come, and the obedience of the nations shall be his. See, we looked at this in depth last December, and you can go back and listen to the message about the Lion of Judah. And I know that some of you like really connected with that, because when we do that song, you guys roar. I love it. My kids are like, all the adults were like roaring and yelling. It was cool. See, basically, the tribe of Judah carries a very important promise. It carries the promise that the Messiah will come from that family line. And here we have a member of the tribe of Judah, and he is choosing to disobey God. He is choosing to break that covenant. See, when he was discovered as the one who stole it, Achan explains himself. He says in Joshua 7, verse 20, it is true. I have sinned against the Lord, the God of Israel, and this is what I have done. When I saw the plunder, a beautiful robe from Babylonia, 200 shekels of silver, and a bar of gold weighing 50 shekels, I coveted them, and I took them. They are hidden in the ground inside my tent with the silver underneath. Okay, so Achan took a few things. What's the big deal? See, God doesn't need the silver. He doesn't need the fancy robe. But see, it's not about the stuff. It's about Achan's heart. It's about his obedience. It's about his love and respect of God. Okay, so are you guys ready for another cool parallel? Okay, ish. Okay, look at this. Okay, so we've got two scriptures up here. We have Achan's account of what he did, and it uses the same phrasing and the same Hebrew words as the account of what Eve did when she ate from the tree of knowledge, good and evil. See, there's a pattern here. They saw what God had told them that they could not have. Then they coveted or desired to have it. And then they took it for themselves despite God's command. See, they were both in a situation where they had to choose between the tree of life and the tree of knowledge, good and evil. Or as we called it in a few series back, the DIY tree, the do-it-yourself tree. And they both chose the option that removes God from the equation. that says, I don't need your provision, God. I can take care of myself. See, Achan may have been a member of the family of Abraham by blood, but his lack of faith and his own attempt at self-preservation, it removed him from being able to inherit the promised land. Because of his action, he and his entire family was destroyed. But on the flip side, because of Rahab's actions, because of her faith, her and her entire family were saved. Just like a commander in the army of the Lord told Joshua that he was not for him or his enemies. See, God is not for or against any specific group of people. Yes, the Israelites lived under the covenant promise. They were the chosen people. But see, they weren't chosen to just be the members of God's family. They were chosen as the family line that Jesus would come through. But see, thousands of years before Jesus destroyed the wall of hostility between the Jews and the Gentiles that we read about in Ephesians, God was adopting anyone that had faith and was true to him into his family. See, Achan teaches us a hard lesson that ethnicity and bloodlines cannot alone secure the blessings of God. And I know that like tribalism is not that big of a deal now, but we still kind of have that us and them mentality. Your bloodline cannot ensure your place in the kingdom, but it also cannot keep you from your place in the kingdom. See, these are things that are obtained by faith alone. In Romans, Paul uses the metaphor of an olive tree to explain to the Gentiles who gets to be in God's family. Kids, are you awake? See, he explains how the natural branches, the lineage of Abraham, otherwise known as the Jews, they can be broken off because of unbelief. And the wild shoots, or the Gentiles, or anyone besides the family of Israel, can be grafted into the family by their faith. So he tells them in Romans 11, starting with verse 22, consider therefore the kindness and sternness of God. Sternness to those who fail, but kindness to you, provided that you continue in his kindness. Otherwise, you will also be cut off. And if they do not persist in unbelief, they will be grafted in, for God is able to graft them in again. See, here's a picture to help give you a visual of what Paul's saying. I like visuals. So this is like an olive tree. And the natural branches that are broken off when they stop producing good fruit. It was their choice. However, the wild shoots who are grafted in are given a chance to grow as if they were a natural part of the original tree. See, Achan was a branch that was broken off. He was a natural inheritant of the promise. But Rahab was a wild shoot that was grafted in. And once grafted in, you become part of the fulfillment of God's promise. All right, so flip to Matthew 1. This is like everyone's favorite passage in the Bible, isn't it? Yeah. You guys all like the genealogies? Yeah. I used to skip over passages like this too. But the more I've learned about the people of the Old Testament, not the Bible story characters, but the actual people and their stories and their lives, the more I've gotten excited when I read things like the genealogies. I'm not going to read it to you, but I want you to see how much that an act of true faith can do. So this is the family tree of Jesus. I've got a graphic here. There we go. And I know you guys can't read that from where you're at. It's probably like this big. But see, Achan was from the tribe of Judah. So this is Jacob, Israel. These are his 12 sons, the 11 sons. They also got blessings. It became tribe leaders. And then Judah. And so Judah, or Achan was part of the tribe of Judah, which is the branch that the Messiah, Jesus, would come from. Now, think about this. His name may have been found in this genealogy if he had not chosen a pretty robe and some silver over being faithful to God. But there is no Achan in this list. But look whose name does appear. I know you probably can't see it, but up there, that little pink one up there, that's Rahab. That's the prostitute. That's the Canaanite. A poor prostitute woman from an enemy nation is one of only five women that are in the genealogy of Jesus. Okay, now did that give you goosebumps? Okay, because if not, you need to get your feelings checked. Because this is amazing. See, you can't hear something like that and not believe that the God that we serve is a God that has a heart for the poor and the outcast and the marginalized of the world. See, there is no story. There is no person that is so hopeless that God cannot rewrite their story. That God cannot graft into the family. See, while living with the Israelites as an adopted, grafted-in member of the family, Rahab became the mother to Boaz, who became the husband of Ruth, which is another non-Israelite woman that was grafted into the family because of her devotion and faith. And then Ruth became the great-grandmother to King David, the king of the Israelites. Two non-Israelites women are his great-grandma and his great-great-grandma. Isn't that cool? I'm way more excited about this than you guys. It's amazing. See, the story of the Battle of Jericho, it does stand as an example of how God is faithful to his promises when we trust him and are faithful to him. But it goes so much deeper than that. See, God's grace is displayed in the salvation that was offered to a Canaanite woman because of her faith. While judgment came down on an Israelite man because of his disobedience. See, both of their stories shows that being a part of the family of God has nothing to do with bloodline. It has everything to do with faith. It has everything to do with the choices that you make. So we talk a lot here about family by choice. I call you guys my family by choice. And it sounds nice, doesn't it? It sounds nice, the idea that you can choose to come in and be a part of a group of people that treat each other like family, like good family, like when you treat your family well, not like brothers and sisters, but like grown-up brothers and sisters, hopefully. See, our hope is that every person that walks in this door feels accepted, loved, and important. But it goes beyond making people feel like they belong. See, we can do our very best to make somebody feel welcome and invite them to be a part of our community, but ultimately it is up to the individual to decide if they want to. So what's the choice? We say family by choice. So what is the choice that the individual has? See, it's the choice between staying or leaving. It's the choice between watching or participating. It's the choice between attending a service and genuinely connecting with people. And it's a choice between being an acquaintance and becoming family. And that's how the kingdom works too. See, we're all welcome to come and see and belong. But it's up to each individual to make the choice. See, the choice that we all have to make is if we will go through life trying to lean on our own understanding, or if, like Moses instructed, that we acknowledge God and we trust him. See, it's the choice between the tree of life and the tree of knowledge, good and evil. It's the choice between self-preservation and selfish ambition and fully obeying God with our lives. It's a choice between doing things our own way and waving the white flag of surrender to God and accepting his salvation for us. And the story of what happened in Jericho, it points to the fact that the hope that we have, which is only found in Jesus, is available to everyone who calls on his name in faith. Jesus himself said, "So for God so loved the world that he gave his only Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish, but have eternal life." So I've got a question for everyone today. It's a simple question. Do you want to be part of God's family? See, it's not just about becoming family by choice with Project Church or Lionheart Ministries. I'm talking about, do you want to be part of God's timeless, universal, international, worldwide family of believers? See, Jesus invited us through his death and resurrection. It was an invitation to everyone. He broke down that dividing wall of hostility. It's not us and them. It's not your in or your out. Or it's not a birthright. It's a choice. See, it's by your faith that you were saved through the grace of Jesus. And it's an open invitation. And see, now's a great time to be grafted in. It's never too late to start growing in the family. It's never too late to be broken off. See, this story, it stands as an invitation and a warning, an encouragement and an admonishment. See, the choices we make determine our position, not in a hierarchy, but in the family. So everyone, close your eyes. The invitation is issued. It's there. God wants you to be part of his family. He created you to be part of his family. But he's not going to force you to grow into a family that you don't want to be a part of. So do you want to be a part of the family? Do you want to surrender your life? Do you want to trust him and his ways? Are you willing to surrender your truth for his truth? Are you willing to look to his ways instead of your ways? So raise your hand if you want to be part of the family and you've never taken the step to accept that invitation. Now raise your hand if you feel like you've been a part of the family, but maybe the choices that you've made have caused you to be broken off. But see, as it said, that God is able to graft you in again. If you feel like you need to be grafted in again, wave the white flag, raise your hand. And we're going to pray. Father, thank you for this family. God, thank you for your grace that covers all of our bad choices. God, just thank you for the invitation that you issued through your Son so that we could all become part of your family. God, thank you for bringing us and challenging us together to live as your family on earth. God, to look past each other's shortcomings, to be able to love with grace and endurance. God, we just thank you for examples of being able to look and see how your grace has been sufficient from the beginning of time. God, I just pray that you would help us, God, to yield our hearts and our minds to you, that we would surrender ourselves to you fully. God, that we would learn to grow in your way. God, that it's not enough to just be grafted in, but we can't be grafted in and then still grow into whatever fruit tree we want to be. God, I just pray that you would help us to yield to you. Yield to your ways. God, yield to your truth. Yield to your heart. God, help us to have the eyes to see the truth of who you are. God, how you're working in this place, how you're working in this time in the world. God, I pray that you would help us to see our place and our purpose in your family. God, if there's days that we don't feel like we have anyone, God, help us remember that we are a part of a bigger family, that we have each other that we can lean on, that we can depend on. God, I just pray that you would just start working in our hearts, reshaping us, growing us in your pattern and your way. God, moving us toward your mission. Father, I just pray that throughout the week, our minds and our hearts would continue to just get nudged in the direction of who you are and the direction that you have for us to go. God, give us a hunger, a thirst for you, to seek out more about who you are, to seek out opportunities to encounter you. God, I pray that our lives would be lives of worship, holy and pleasing to you. But Father, I just pray right now that through the doubts, through the mistakes, God, that you would help us to have grace for ourselves too. Your grace is sufficient, and sometimes we can't seem to have grace for ourselves. God, when we don't feel like we're worthy of being grafted into your family, God, remind us of Rahab. God, remind us of Ruth. God, remind us of all the broken people throughout time that you have made room for. God, if you can lift someone like Rahab up and place her in the direct lineage of your Son, God, help me to know that I can be worthy too. God, I just pray right now that you would help us to lean on each other. God, to humbly submit ourselves to you and to just share our love with the world around us. Amen. Hey, today, don't leave here today without talking to someone. If there's something that's stirring in your heart, if there's something that you're questioning, if there's something that is breaking you down, we are family. There's someone here that will pray with you. If you need prayer today, make sure somebody knows that. Don't leave here feeling rejected, because that feeling is not coming from outside of you. Because all are accepted, all are welcome. But see, God's love for us is so good that He brings us into His family. He doesn't leave us on the wild shoot. He doesn't leave us in the brambles to get choked out. He picks us up and He grafts us in to His tree of life. So yes, that means change. That means growing in a different way than you were before. But His love is so good that He does not want to leave you behind to get lost. So if you need to talk to somebody today, if you need to pray with somebody today, the doors are open as long as you need them here.